This is Pittsburgh Explainer, a podcast from 90.5 WESA. Every Friday, we help you understand some of the most important news stories from southwestern Pennsylvania. It's Friday, June 5th. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Liz Reed. The death of George Floyd under the knee of a Minneapolis police officer on Memorial Day has inspired protests across the country. Here in Pittsburgh, demonstrations began on Saturday and have continued every day since. For protesters, this isn't only about George Floyd. It's about Antoine Rose, a teenager who was killed by an East Pittsburgh police officer in 2018. It's about Breonna Taylor, a medical worker who was shot by Louisville police while in her home. It's about Eric Garner, Philando Castile, Johnny Gamage, Tamir Rice, and the many other Black Americans who have died at the hands of police. It's about the outrage protesters feel at the disproportionate policing and incarceration of Black bodies. Here's a little bit of what that outrage sounded like in Pittsburgh this week.
Black lives, they matter here! Black lives, they matter here! Black lives, they matter here!
And when things are difficult, we don't know how to stand with one another. Oh, this is the night that we come together. This is the night that we come together on one accord. This is the night when we let the enemy know, we draw a line in the sand and say, no farther.
Don't shoot! Don't shoot! Don't shoot! Don't shoot! Don't shoot!
We will turn our attention into the intention that equal treatment under the law will not be a hope, but an actuality. Though we live in tension, we will cast an intentional vote for those who have the courage of their convictions and for those who believe like Angela Davis, I'm no longer accepting things I cannot change. I'm changing the things I cannot accept.
Breonna Taylor! Breonna Taylor! Breonna Taylor!
You fear what you cannot put down and keep it down.
That's right.
So they fear you. Black men, they fear you.
Yes.
Your intelligence, your power, your ability is feared. So if I keep you down, you can't do it. But it's time for us to stand up and say enough is enough.
Yes.
We will take no more.
Justice!
What do we want it?
Now!
If we don't get it,
shut it down!
Nearly every member of the WESA newsroom has been reporting on these actions. Joining us today are two of them, Ariel Worthy and Anlie Herring from our government and accountability team. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Liz.
Thank you.
Anlie, you were reporting on the downtown protest on Saturday. Can you describe what you saw?
It was an enormous gathering of people, and for the first 2 hours of the event, which started at just about 2:30 in the afternoon, it was an entirely peaceful gathering, and the streets were completely filled as people were winding their way from near Market Square to the Lower Hill near Duquesne's campus and terminating at PPG Paints Arena. So it was really an amazing sight, and a lot of the chants were familiar from the protests over the fatal police shooting of Antoine Rose, but eventually things did turn to violence. Essentially, there was a small group of protesters that smashed a police car, and that prompted mounted officers to come riding into the crowd, and things just really quickly turned to chaos. And from there, my colleague Bill O'Driscoll took over, and you would have seen his reporting and the reporting of other local journalists showing the looting and the use of force by police officers, rubber bullets, tear gas, flashbangs, and ultimately with events ending with the curfew later that evening.
Now, I heard some people at the protests say that the police moved on protesters, the police that were mounted on horses moved on protesters before the police car was smashed up. I mean, did you see any evidence to this effect?
I didn't personally. I will say it was such a big crowd that it was impossible to keep tabs on everything that was going on. But from my perspective, right next to that police vehicle that had been attacked by this small group of protesters, I didn't detect a police presence in any up-close way until those officers came in after the car had been smashed.
Now, Ariel, you were at the East Liberty protest on Monday. Bring us up to speed what happened that day and into the night.
Yeah, so that protest, it was a little different, but not much different. There was a large crowd that only got bigger as the day went on. And it actually started in front of Target in East Liberty. It continued down Penn Avenue and all through East Liberty and in Larimer and just kind of the adjoining neighborhoods, and it ended back at Target. However, there wasn't heavy police presence at the march itself. There were, you know, there was, of course, police in the front of the line and the back of the line, just kind of moving up the barricade as demonstrators marched through the streets. However, I did see what I thought was military at the time on the roofs of a few buildings, but Mayor Bill Peduto claimed that there was not the National Guard and the military was not in Pittsburgh. So the protest, it lasted about 3.5 hours and it was peaceful. There were no issues. Organizers even told everyone, you know, to go home. There was an 8:30 curfew and to get home safely. And this was also around 7 o'clock. So there were some people still kind of lingering around and still on the streets. And at that point, police, they kind of lined up on the street and they were telling the crowd that they needed to disperse and that they needed to leave. Some were kind of lingering around and hanging around. Many of the protesters claimed that they were peacefully protesting and that they were not trying to start a riot. But police did shoot smoke canisters, rubber bullets. At the time, they said that they did not shoot tear gas, but they walked that back like a day or so later. And so there's been disputes as to why they were shot at, basically, and why these methods were used to disperse them when a lot of the protesters claimed that there was no violence taking place.
Pittsburgh police and Mayor Bill Peduto have faced substantial criticism for law enforcement's role in these confrontations and for the methods used, such as tear gas, such as rubber bullets. What are people saying?
You know, some people are saying that it is excessive, that it was very unnecessary force, and that their claims that there were people who were trying to incite riots, that they're saying that's not true because it was a peaceful protest. However, I will say, though, like a couple of windows were smashed on Monday night, but it was nothing that was, you know, excessive or anything. So a lot of people are saying that they geared up for a riot when there wasn't even a riot that was going to happen.
How has Peduto responded to these criticisms?
This is Ann Lee. I can respond to that. Mayor Peduto acknowledges that there are conflicting accounts about what happened Monday night in East Liberty, and he said very late that night that he would review transcripts of police orders that would have been transmitted by radio from their Emergency Operations Command Center to the officers or to commanders on the ground. He said he would do a very thorough review of that, and he said Thursday that he spent all of Tuesday going through that review and looking at social media posts, getting expert opinions, and looking at other evidence, though he did say at the outset that he would not be releasing those transcripts, which drew a lot of criticism from a range of people, including police accountability advocates, open records advocates, and even the head of the police union in Pittsburgh, Robert Swartzwelder, said that he has no problem with those records being released. So for now, the city's saying that they're doing a legal review to see what they can disclose. But this really kind of goes to the heart of the issue, a lot of people are saying, because people are protesting police treatment of citizens and saying we need transparency in order to allow for real accountability. I mean, how can you hold officers accountable if you don't know what happened? So that in itself has been a major issue. Beyond that, the mayor has walked back his statements about the use of different crowd dispersal tools. He even admitted that the information he had for that Monday night news conference was inaccurate. And on Thursday, he rolled out this whole new agenda on police reform, and there was a whole host of policies that he said he planned to implement immediately, some things around use of force, and also things he said that he would be pushing state lawmakers to adopt around use of force also, and the extent to which local governments can punish police officers if they're found to have engaged in misconduct.
Ariel, I can't help but ask you what it's been like covering these protests as a Black journalist.
It's been hard, I won't lie. It's been a very difficult thing to see on Monday. Even when I was covering the protest, I kind of had to just like walk off to the side for a few minutes and just cry, because it was just, it's a lot to see and a lot to know. And it's hard, I feel like, as a Black journalist, there's not going to be like 100% objectivity when covering these kinds of things, because these things do impact you. They do hurt you, not just professionally knowing the details, but personally also. It's been a very rough time, and I'm getting through it, but I will say, as a Black journalist, I'm happy to see so many people stand up and be at these things, because it's incredible and amazing just to see a community out like this. But it's also heartbreaking. It's also just a very heartbreaking thing to experience and to know about.
Anli, you're also a journalist of color. Do you have any thoughts you'd like to share?
It has been interesting to observe this, having grown up in Pittsburgh, which is not a very diverse city, as a person of color, though I'm not Black, and most of the racial minorities in the region are Black. I did grow up very conscious of my racial identity and otherness in that regard. So it's been really just interesting to observe these things playing out in the community that I grew up in and know so well. Not that these issues are unique in any way to Pittsburgh. This is a national and, to an extent, a global phenomenon. But I will say that seeing the community engage around these issues, by choice or not, is interesting when, having grown up here, seeing these things in plain sight from my perspective, yet lurking beneath the surface at the same time, has been a really remarkable experience, and it has been a lot to process, and I am certainly still doing that and probably will be for the rest of my life.
I just want to express my appreciation to both of you for your reporting this week, and I'm very proud to call both of you my colleagues.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you, Liz.
It's time for a quick break. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Isay of StoryCorps. Through StoryCorps interviews, people have found wisdom and comfort in the words of their loved ones. At this moment, we need those connections more than ever. That's why, together with public radio stations, we're launching StoryCorps Connect, an online tool to record interviews with loved ones remotely and become part of American history at the Library of Congress. Learn how at StoryCorpsConnect.org.
Amid widespread protests against police violence and the ongoing global pandemic, it's easy to forget that Pennsylvania had an election this week. Here in person to explain the results is WESA's government and accountability editor, Chris Potter.
Hi, Liz, from this end of the table.
Nice to see you in person.
It really is. It's great. Although we're like 10 feet apart. This is like the rich couple that doesn't get along and they're eating dinner together. And there's just like 10 feet of table between us.
Yes.
We're just like staring at each other.
Yes. I feel like I've seen that scene in movies multiple
many
times.
Many times, yes. And now we're living it.
So are there any trends or major takeaways from the primary election this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's both the results themselves, who won, who lost, and then there's the conduct of the election, how the mechanics went. On the first score, I think the big story would be on the Democratic side here in Allegheny County, we had no less than 4 female candidates, 3 of them really first-time candidates, who won races for the state legislature. Summer Lee was the one incumbent in the group. She won 2 years ago, won by a whopping 3-1 margin against Chris Rowland, who'd been put up against her.
And he got the Allegheny County Democratic Committee endorsement, right?
Yeah. In fact, none of these candidates I'm mentioning did. The Allegheny County Democratic Committee snubbed all four of these women in February. And you can bet that right now there's a conversation going on in many different living rooms and consultant offices about what is the value of that endorsement. I mean, I think you'd have to say the Allegheny County Democratic Committee was the big loser on Tuesday, because it simply showed that people do not necessarily care what the committee says. The other candidates who won, Emily Kincaid, toppled an incumbent, Adam Ravenstahl, brother of the former mayor of Pittsburgh. She beat him rather comfortably. Lissa Geiger-Schulman won a tighter race against Marco Adesano in House District 30. That's a North Hills district. She'll be taking on Lori Mizgorski, the Republican incumbent. And the much celebrated House District 36, a four-way race won by Jessica Benham, a disability rights advocate, who beats three other people to replace Harry Reidshaw this coming November. So that is a big, big story right there. There was some other drama here and there. The Republicans had a much quieter session. Most of the people who had the really institutional backing did succeed. So there you go. A lot of change happening there.
This election was primarily vote by mail. How did that go?
Well, I think you'd have to say, in terms of the actual ballot counting and how election day itself went, things went pretty smoothly. There were a few hiccups here and there, but that's always true on election day. I think what we don't know, the one big question we don't know yet, is how many people requested ballots, said, send me my mail-in ballot and I'll send it back, and then never got a ballot. And we don't know the answer to that question yet. We don't know it for a few reasons. One is that Governor Wolf, the night before the election, said Allegheny and five other counties have another week. If you postmarked your ballot on election day, the elections office will still count it, even if it doesn't reach the county until next Tuesday.
And this was because of the protest, because there was concerns that people might not be able to get their ballots back in.
Yes, combination of the protests, the coronavirus, of course, is the backdrop to all of this, and then sheer demand, sheer interest in all of this. So, but it was really the protest that separated these six counties from all the others. So we don't know. Some of this may still come in. We also don't know how many people, because every year people request absentee ballots, and then they just don't bother to send them in because they just decide they don't care that much or whatever. So how much of that is just sort of that kind of churn that comes every election, and how much of it reflects just a county elections office desperately trying to keep up with demand and not always succeeding? That's the big question. We don't know that yet. When it comes to the mechanics of counting the ballots, things went pretty smoothly. It took longer to get results. We really didn't have results in hand until Wednesday afternoon. We usually have them late Tuesday night, but we all knew that was coming. We all knew when we had those touchscreen machines, whatever else you want to say about them, they are fast. At the end of the night, you can just download the results. It's like that. When you got all these individual ballots on paper, there's the paper record. That's what everybody wanted. But it takes time to scan them and to fold them and unfold them and run them through the machine.
Now, turnout was quite high.
Yeah.
For a primary. To what are election watchers attributing the turnout? Is it because people are feeling politically engaged? Is it because of the ease of vote by mail? Do we have a sense?
Yeah, I don't know that we have a definitive sense, but we definitely have some theories, and I think you've mentioned two of them. The vote by mail is something people could do. It was fairly easy. It's also the case that, and this isn't just Allegheny County, it's across the entire state, vote by mail was something Democrats really were pushing and Republicans were not. So we had a lot more interest on the Democratic side when it came to turnout than on the Republican side. The other side of it, too, is maybe, and this is a theory, that Democrats are just more fired up this year than Republicans are. Even though there weren't a lot of competitive races on this ballot, I mean, this is the primary, other than the race for Auditor General, which doesn't usually gin up a ton of enthusiasm, there really weren't any contested primary races at the top of the ticket. Is all the action was down at the state Senate and state House level. But yet still, you saw a lot of Democrats gearing up, getting themselves psyched up for November. And then too, the sort of convenience of vote by mail, people trying that out, kind of kicking the tires and seeing what they thought of it.
Do we have any sense of if November is going to be heavily vote by mail?
I think it's very clear that Democrats, the ones I've talked to, think this is a good thing for them. Even before the coronavirus hit and made this sort of a medical necessity as much as anything else, there are a lot of Democratic activists who are like, this is going to be great for us. We can really pinpoint our turnout the vote efforts. We can spread them out over time. We don't have to rush around as much on election day. And there's also this question, does the pandemic crop up again? You know, your epidemiologist will tell you the fall is a tough time for flu viruses and things like that. So we'll see. I would suspect that, yeah, you will see a lot of vote by mail also in November. And I think one of the concerns going forward, one of the reasons it's so important to figure out what happened to the people who asked for a ballot and didn't get one, is there going to be a lot more interest in November. And the margin for error is going to be so much smaller. And it's really going to be a challenge. I felt good at the end of Tuesday night about how things went, but I am still very worried that there's just so little margin for error and so little willingness to extend a belief in goodwill on the parts of really hardworking elections staff.
Potter, nice to see you in person, and thanks for being on the show this week.
Oh, thanks for having me. Good seeing you too.
Take care.
It's time for another break. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Katie Blackley, producer of Pittsburgh Explainer. Thanks for listening to this podcast. You can help other people find us by subscribing and following Pittsburgh Explainer on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. Now back to the program.
Today, Allegheny County moved into the green phase of Governor Tom Wolf's reopening plan. WESA's digital director, Sarah Kovash, has been taking your questions about what exactly that means, and she joins us now. Sarah, it's so nice to see you.
Hi, it's good to see you in person, too. It's been a long time.
How have you been keeping yourself busy at home?
I've been actually woodworking. I've been working on my patio and building furniture. I recently built some Adirondack chairs for my front porch.
Okay, so we're going to do like a lightning round type situation. I'm going to give you a word or a couple of words, and you're going to tell me what people can expect as we move into the green phase. Got it?
I'm so ready.
Restaurants.
They will be open. They are going to be operating at 50% capacity. They're probably going to be looking a little different than what you're used to. Businesses are probably going to have to move around some of their furniture and block off some sections to make sure that people can properly social distance as well. You do need to wear a mask if you're going, and the staff at the restaurant will have to wear masks as well. Obviously, if you're eating, you can take off your mask. And if you have a medical reason why you can't wear a mask, that's also okay.
Gyms.
They will be open. They are also operating at 50% capacity. It's suggested that they offer appointments for people to kind of limit how many people are in the gym. And equipment must be arranged in a way that people can maintain social distancing and be 6 feet apart.
Hairdressers and barbers. This is a big one.
They will also be open and operating at 50% capacity. It's also, again, highly encouraged that they do an appointment system too.
Daycares.
Daycares were allowed to open in the yellow phase, and they're still open. The staff at daycares are required to wear masks, but the children are not. They're also not enforcing social distancing with the kids, since that would be nearly impossible. But they are advised to keep the same groups of kids together, so keeping the same group in one classroom. The other thing, too, is not all daycare centers have to open. So just because they're able to open, it doesn't necessarily mean that yours will.
Okay, and then finally, masks and social distancing. Like, do we still have to wear masks? Do we still have to stay 6 feet apart?
Even though we're in the green phase, coronavirus and COVID-19 are still a threat, and we still need to take a lot of precautions. So you do want to wear a mask, and of course, some of the places that I've already mentioned require you to wear a mask. I know that if you've been out shopping, most big retailers are requiring people to wear masks too. And the state this whole time has been reinforcing their catchphrase, which is, my mask protects you and your mask protects me. And of course, maintaining 6 feet distance from people will also help contain the spread of coronavirus. And obviously, there's a lot more that goes to this, and people have a lot of questions around what the green phase means. And so we actually asked a lot of our listeners what those questions are, and we've answered them on a long FAQ page on our website. So if you go to WESA.FM, you can find more of those answers there.
Sarah, thanks for your reporting this week and the past several months as well.
Thanks for having me and giving me an opportunity to get out of my house finally.
That's Pittsburgh Explainer for this week. Our show is produced by Katie Blackley. Larkin Page Jacobs is our managing editor. You can find all of our news coverage at our website, WESA.FM, and of course on the air at 90.5 FM. I'm your host, Liz Reed. Thanks for listening. Let's talk next week.
Southern trees bear strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Gallant south, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for sun to rot, for the tree to drop. Here's a strange and bitter